And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do it. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Breton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. Oh, man. What a horrible weekend, Mike.
I've been looking forward to recording this podcast all afternoon, Shane, and I'm sure you've been dreading it. And for those who have not been listening, we got a good reason why. Shane and I both picked Mississippi State to beat Florida, but I was, you know, closer to game day. I could kind of grasp my head around the fact that if Mississippi State, the issues that lingered there against Kentucky, if that kind of reared its ugly head again, I thought Florida had a real chance to win this game if that happened, and that's, of course, indeed what happened. Shane went a little bit bolder the other way. We're going to play this clip from our Friday episode to get a little recap on what Shane had to say coming into this one.
Going out, I mean, this team flushed Kentucky as soon as they got home, and it was all about Florida after that.
But I would say on the flip side, Shane, if Florida goes in there and wins at Mississippi State, I think we got to give them a ton of respect. If they do that, that sets up a huge game the following week at home at LSU. I would probably favor Florida to win that LSU game if they can beat this Mississippi State team.
Mike, if Florida wins this damn game, I will sing the fight song Monday. It ain't happening, brother.
All right, Shane, so how bad are you regretting these comments at this point?
Oh, real bad, man. Real bad. I have been dreading this all day. You know, I'm a man of my word, and of course, I'm gonna sing this fucking song, not because I want to, because I promised I would. And, you know, it was just a combination of everything. My Vols lost. South Carolina didn't win. I had money on that one. And then here you got Florida and the damn fight song, which is very complicated, by the way. I didn't realize it until I'm watching I've watched like this thing 50 times, so I'm sure I'm going to butcher it. But let's go ahead and get this shit out of the way. You ready?
Oh, I've been waiting. I'm ready.
Oh, damn. Yeah, orange and blue, waving forever, forever pride, old Florida, may she droop never. We'll sing a song for the flag today, cheer for the team at play. Our goal will fight our way for Florida. So give a cheer for the orange and blue, waving forever, forever pride, old Florida, may she droop never. We'll sing a song of flag today, cheer for the team at play. On the goal we'll fight our way for Florida.
Oh, hey, Shane. I'm not even joking here. I forgot to hit record, so you got to do that again.
Are you shitting me?
No, I'm recording it.
Got him!
Oh, man, yeah, that was pretty bad. That was pretty bad. That is a complicated song. I never heard the words there, but...
It's like fast in one part and then slow in the other, and then... Like, this video does no help because, like, it just shows you the word right when you're supposed to sing it, so.
All right, Shane, now that we got that out of the way, let's just go around the league.
Now let's go around the league. Around
the league. We hadn't decided how we're going to play the guys, so, and I wouldn't tell you if I did. So, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week. All our players, I mean, it's just like, right? I mean, just hear it over and over, and you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that we play at practice. So you just you get used to it. It's a catchy tune, right? I mean,
this game's gonna be a street fight. This game's gonna be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time. It's time to put on the hard hat, lunch pail. Let's get to work.
I'd like to apologize to all the Florida fans out there. You won. You kicked their ass. And more importantly, how shitty did Mississippi State look?
Yeah, let's jump into that one. Obviously, I think that was the big game of the week. It kind of, you know, it turned out to be a little bit of a dud. Not to say, you know, I'm not trying to call out Florida by any means, but it just was not an entertaining game. You know, the final score, 13-6, big win for Florida. They've won two SEC games away from home. That's a terrific start. Obviously, they lost to Kentucky, but still winning two away from home. That sets up a huge game next week against LSU. But, you know, before we get into that game, Nick Fitzgerald, 11 of 26, only 98 yards passing. Mississippi State only had 104 yards rushing, so 202 yards total. And Florida, you know, they weren't that great on offense, but they were much better than Mississippi State. There's a number of penalties, so you definitely got to give Florida credit for kind of rebounding. They had 11 penalties for 90 yards. It's hard to do that on the road and come away with the win, but they did it in this one.
No, you're right, man. And I tell you what, man, hats off to this Florida Gators defense because, you know, I thought it was a fluke last week with all the six turnovers. And I thought that was more about Tennessee being bad than it was Florida being good. But, man, I tell you what, they followed it up this week, and they kept Mississippi State in check. I mean, that Florida defense is legit.
Yeah, the defense is there. The offense obviously still has a ways to go, which is troublesome with LSU on the deck. But, you know, this was just a game with a lot of emotion, and that's kind of what we want to jump in immediately here with Dan Mullen, his comments on his return to Starkville. Here's Dan Mullen right after this big win for Florida.
Boy, I mean, it was great. It was kind of like Bizarro World. Right? Isn't that like, it's like a Seinfeld, like, you know, like the Bizarro, like there's the Bizarro George and the Bizarro, right, in that episode. Because, you know, I mean, I was in the same locker I've been in for 9 years. They flipped the locker rooms. Just like, I'm in here, I'm like, wow. And, you know, warming up on the same side of the field. The only thing I had to make sure is I took a right instead of a left when I ran out of the tunnel. You know, but it's pretty special for me, you know, I mean, is to come in here. It's probably the last time I'm ever in this stadium. You know, I mean, you know, with how the SEC works, I mean, to finish, this is my last time ever being at Davis-Wade Stadium, to finish with a win. And you know, I mean, I don't want to freak everybody out, but what is it, like 14 years? You know, that's a long time.
Well, Shane, we can't include a Mullen clip without some kind of weird, wacko comment here, and he did it again. He even did it himself with the Bizarro comment there. But yeah, this had to be, you know, all jokes aside, this had to be incredibly awkward for him. He tried not to make it about himself. I think he did an excellent job not making it about himself till after the game. But your thoughts on Mullen kind of going back into Starkville and winning this one?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be hard. He was down there for what, 9 years?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he built the team up to the caliber they are today. And so to go back home, I mean, that has to hurt a little bit inside just because so many people believed in him down there. So many people bought into Dan. And, yes, he made the move to Florida, which I think in the long run is a lot better for his future as far as coaching. But there was a lot of support back home in Mississippi State. So it's like – it was kind of like a bittersweet game. I bet he was torn there at the end.
Yeah, and flipping to the other coaching sideline, obviously Joe Moorhead, terribly frustrating for Mississippi State fans. I think any goodwill this guy had is basically gone at this point, not to suggest that he's on his way out. I think, you know, I don't think it's ever right to judge a coach mid-season almost at any point. I don't like to do that, but and particularly in his first year, so I'm not even suggesting that, but You know, this guy's touted as an offensive guy, and while they have been outstanding against lesser competition, against, you know, solid SEC defenses, they've not done anything. 13 points in two games is obviously not going to cut it, and the honeymoon is officially over there in Starkville.
Well, exactly, and the schedule doesn't get any easier. They've got the Auburn Tigers coming up, and then LSU, so... you follow that even up with Texas A&M. So, I mean, Morehead has – I mean, there's a chance Mississippi State loses three more games in a row here, and then we may be talking about a hot seat.
Yeah, and here's Joe Morehead comments, you know, after the game, basically asked, you know, have you ever experienced this, and what – how can you fix this? And he's basically at a loss for words.
Joe, can you ever remember going through a stretch like this offensively where it's been this inept?
No.
As you look at what happened the last two games, is it to the point where it's going to be some personnel changes, do you think? Have you reached that point yet?
Yeah, we'll go look at the film tomorrow and then make determinations from there.
Would those likely be on the offensive line? Or?
At this point, offensively, we just got to make sure we're, you know, leaving no stone unturned, you know, make sure we're getting the best 11 on the field.
All right, Shane, that just doesn't sound like a confident guy at this point, does it?
No, this guy, they did so much to prepare for this game. We were talking about the wideout. They pulled out every stop and still fell short. I mean, this game, if you actually watched it, it was almost impossible to watch. It was such an ugly, ugly game. And everybody thought Morehead would come in and he'd be the one that would be the offensive guru, but Fitz couldn't do anything. The running backs couldn't do anything. I mean, it was just a sloppy, sloppy game, Mike.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane. So staying in the SEC East, Georgia, number two team in the nation, took down Tennessee 38-12. But, you know, that final score was a bit misleading. Tennessee actually, you know, I don't want to say they ever truly challenged in this game, but they made things interesting there into the fourth quarter, and I think the fans got a little bit nervous. What was your takeaway from your boys in orange there?
Absolutely. I mean, when it started, I mean, when Isaac, how you said, Nada?
Yeah, Isaac Nada.
The tight end. If you didn't watch this game, if you didn't watch his play, we go back there. We sack the quarterback, strip sack him. Mm-hmm. He fumbles the ball. Isaac picks up the ball and runs it like, 30-something yards scores a freaking touchdown. Mm-hmm. So we were just about to get our momentum going, and then a Tennessee thing happened. This is something that always happens to us. We strip sack him, tight end picks it up, and runs 31 yards for a score. So, yes, that really hurt. But there were some positives, man. I'm not totally deflated. The score is 12-38, which we thought it would be close like this, closer than what Vegas was saying. And there was some good stuff coming out of this. So I don't think all Tennessee fans are hanging their head today. They saw like a glimmer of what could happen. And if you watch that Auburn game, you feel a little bit positive during this bye week that maybe we have a shot. Of course, yeah, you know, it's just Tennessee.
My most popular tweet of Saturday, only Tennessee could strip sack a team for a touchdown against themselves. And that basically sums it up right there. You know, like I was noting, you know, I'm a little bit higher on Tennessee the past couple of weeks. I've moved them up in my power rankings, which has drawn plenty of people to just point out that I'm just this huge homer, apparently. But for me, it's about the defense. Tennessee's defense for basically a month now, they've played some really good football. Now, they don't match up particularly well with Georgia. You know, Georgia did have 17, you know, points in the first half. That's not going to get it done, but... like you said, I mean, they're strip sacks where somehow they result in fumbles. I mean, that's just pure luck. And if Tennessee was not going three and out, three and out, three and out, I think their defense would be helped a little bit more. Tennessee was just – they couldn't even run the ball in this game. I mean, their leading rusher had 27 yards. That's not going to cut it. They had 66 total on the ground on 25 carries for a 2.6 average. I mean, when you're playing basically with one arm tied behind your back, you're going to give way there. And again, the 26 points, very misleading. Tennessee had it within, I believe it was, what was it, a 12-point game, something like 13 points, something like that. And Tennessee fumbled deep in Georgia territory, so they score there. That was coming off another Georgia touchdown. So that's what extended this final lead. But, you know, Jeremy Pruitt was pretty emotional after this one and just kind of noted that, you know, I don't think he mentioned the strip fumble for a touchdown later, just saying, you know, that's basically, I never seen that before in my life. But he really credited his team for, you know, not giving up, continuing to fight, and they really did fight. So here's Pruitt. I thought he was going to break down and cry in this one.
That we got fight in us. That we're not going to quit. Kind of gets me excited. Excuse me. You know, these guys on this team have had a lot of negatives go toward them in a while for a long time. And I'm proud of them the way they fought. They started last week. And it ain't easy. All right, let me tell you something. That team in red today tried to change the way we thought. All right, that's the way they're coached. All right, that's the way they play. They play the right way. Okay? Our guys kept fighting. All right, which means we're headed in the right direction. And that excites me. That's why I'm getting a little bit emotional.
All right, Shane, so when you hear Pruitt talking about this and just kind of the emotion of him, it doesn't seem like anymore that he's overwhelmed. It just seems like, you know, he kind of sees the progress, but I think he's frustrated that obviously they're not winning with that progress.
Yeah, that's what it felt like to me. There, like you said, this thing got in within 13 points, and I don't know. There were some questionable calls out there that I think maybe he wished he had back. You know, maybe instead of punting, trying to go for it on that fourth down. And I don't know. I think that this has got to be a good thing for Tennessee. I mean, this is number two team in the nation with the Georgia Bulldogs, and we hung in. We didn't get. Everybody thought they were going to hang 60 points on us, you know, and that didn't happen. So, but I will say on the flip side of the coin, Georgia fans, if you're a Georgia fan, are you happy with this game? Because granted, you got the victory, but there was some, you talk about some questionable calls. There's some questionable calls on that offense Saturday.
Yeah. And the big one for me for Georgia is just what the hell it is that they're exactly doing with these quarterbacks. Because they're just, it seems like they're flip-flopping them, and it's not even series to series, it's play to play. And, you know, they're obviously when Justin Fields comes in there, he's more of a running threat, but it'll just be out of the blue. They bring him in, and then they bring him right out. And then I don't know what the hell they're doing here with this quarterback situation. And that's something that Kirby Smart was asked about after the game, and he seemed like bothered just by the question. So let's play these comments, and then we can get into that.
This game went a little differently as far as your quarterbacks went, with them kind of coming in and out a little bit more. How would you assess the way they played today?
I thought both guys did some good things. I think Justin provided us a spark that we needed at times, and he's a very diligent worker. He's been meeting extra. He's coming in to learn things and pick them up, and he gives us an asset to the offense that sometimes provides us a spark we may need. I thought Jake did a great job commanding the offense, understanding where to go with the ball. If we don't give up pressure on some of those third downs, he probably even hits even bigger plays, because there were some plays out there that we left hanging that a couple of them he didn't have a chance because of the pressure in the pocket. So we got to do a better job protecting him. But I was pleased with both those guys play. They're good football players.
Was it the plan, Coach, to get him in for one snap? I know you said in the past his nerves are a little high when he first comes in. Was it the plan to get him in for one snap, get him back out?
The plan is, there is no plan. Next question.
All right, Shane. I mean, based on what Kirby's got to say there and just what you saw on Saturday, what do you make of this quarterback situation for Georgia?
I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know. It seems like you're shaking things up when they don't need to be shaken. Like, Jake Fromm, is he your guy? Is he your guy? Is he the one that you're going to stick with throughout the year? Or do you really want to get Justin Fields? It felt like they were itching to get him out there and let him do something. But then when he gets out there, he just runs the ball. I think he only threw one pass, and it was for 5 yards. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on with that situation. But I just I think they should have gave – if they're going to put him out there, like you said, maybe give him a series, maybe give him a quarter, something along those lines. Don't put him in there when the game's over and you're just handing the ball off because you're not going to learn anything. And but that was another thing. The Georgia Bulldogs kind of have struggled with the running game, and they were doing great there at the start of the ball game, and they kind of got away from it. I think they were getting like 4 or 5 yards every first down, it felt like. And I'd be curious what their third down conversion was, because when they needed a third down, it seems like that's when they decided to go to the running game. It's just, like I said, some questionable play calling there. And hopefully, I will tell you, the line looked a lot better Saturday.
Yeah, and it was when Brian Herrien, who's basically the third or fourth string, however you want to cut it there at Georgia, when he kind of came in and was getting the carries in the fourth quarter, that's kind of what put this game away. It was that big drive in the fourth quarter when Tennessee really started to challenge in this game. They put it in Herrien's hands, and he delivered. But, you know, going back to that quarterback deal, Jake Fromm, not a great day, not a terrible day, but there was I want to say two or three passes, particularly deep shots that they took that, you know, he would overshoot a receiver by a yard or two here or there. And had they connected on those, I think this game's a different story. But I think Tennessee did a really good job of, even if they weren't blitzing Jake Fromm and getting to him and sacking him, they did get a couple sacks, but they were pressuring him enough to affect his downfield throws. And I think that's got to be promising for Tennessee too, because that's something that entering the season, they had no pass rush. And like you said, playing the number two team in the nation and getting to the quarterback several times, they strip sacked him twice, I want to say. So,
yeah,
I mean, it was like I said, Tennessee's defense is not very deep, but it seems like their starters are really starting to grasp what Jeremy Pruitt wants. And, you know, they're playing some solid ball right now.
Yeah, for sure. But then there was some cursed juju out there too. And like I said, we talked about the opening score, Blankenship's kick. Did you see that one where he had like five, like it was a bad snap, and then he just sat there, and then he readjusted and then kicked it through. It was just, I mean, the fumble recovery, and then we find out it was a false start. I mean, it was one thing after another. That's Tennessee luck. I made a tweet the other day. I was glad that we play 12 teams, so at least 12 fan bases get to experience and view a Tennessee's fortune. So
it's one of those things, you won't believe it till you see it.
That's right, man.
All right, Shane, sticking in the SEC East, a big one here from Lexington. Kentucky continues to trend on. You know, this was a game that was back and forth. It ended up as a pick 'em, but Kentucky won by 2 touchdowns, 24-10. What were your immediate takeaways from Kentucky's big win over South Carolina?
Well, Mike, it's apologizing Monday because, you know, probably the one I was the most wrong about was this game right here. And I'm telling you what, Kentucky is legit. Kentucky has got a great program. And I tell you, Georgia better watch out. This is all of a sudden a very intriguing game, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, again, Kentucky solid in the line of scrimmage. I think Terry Wilson continues to progress. I don't think he's ever going to be, you know, an elite passer, but they don't need him to be. They just need him to be able to, you know, get the checkdowns, and he's capable of hitting deep shots, and he's just such a damn dangerous runner. When you pair him with Benny Snell and those guys they got back there, Rose, I mean, it's like a three-headed monster of running out of the backfield. And this is just an incredibly dangerous offensive team. And then on the flip side, their defense is just playing lights out. They intercepted Jake Bentley 3 times in this game.
Yeah, I think that was the thing that stood out to me the most was just the yardage. They didn't have anybody over 44 yards rushing. They didn't have anybody with over, I think, 40, 50 yards passing or receiving. It was just – they were just locked down. And the offense looked good. They did what they needed to do. They kept the ball. But I will tell you, man, I don't know if you noticed this, but toward the end, especially that second half, this game immediately – I mean, for as exciting as that first half was, the second half was almost unbearable to watch.
There was cramping, and I got air quotes going on, just about like every other play slowing down South Carolina. Mm-hmm. There was tons of penalties. This thing just, it felt like it would never end. It felt like the longest game of Saturday, if you ask me.
Yeah, you mentioned the penalties. Each team had 11, so 22 total, and over 200 yards of penalty yardage in this one. It really was kind of a sloppy affair, and that's something that Will Muschamp noted. Another big thing that in my mind, Deebo Samuel, I don't think they targeted him enough. He only had two catches in this game. One of them was a 58-yard touchdown, but he had 61 yards total, so the other play was like nothing. I don't know what the hell South Carolina is doing in that regard. They need to get him more involved in the game plan.
Mm-hmm.
But, after the game, Will Muschamp called into question just, basically his team on the turnovers and the penalties just killing them. So here's Muschamp after the game.
Do your job, and we got guys jumping out of gaps trying to make plays. Not lack of effort, not lack of want to, but not very smart. And just discipline and doing what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to do it. And we come back in the second half and do that. We didn't make any changes. We didn't call anything different. There was absolutely nothing different as far as what we did defensively. You turn the ball over four times. You have 11 penalties as a team. Field position in the second half offensively really hurt us. Give Kentucky credit. They got a good football team. We said it all week. We self-inflicted a lot of issues for ourselves. But, again, you give Kentucky credit. Well, we're going to watch the film and be extremely disappointed in a lot of self-inflicted issues. Again, I'm not taking any credit away from Kentucky at all. They played well. They're well coached. They got a good team. But we hurt ourselves. You go the first third down of the game, you drop the dig. It's first down. And we're moving the chains. We dropped the ball. How many drops we had tonight? Six? Seven? I don't know. Big plays, too. I can't catch it for them. They got to catch the ball. That's what our own scholarship for. They got to catch the ball.
All right, Shane. He sounds like a damn broken man here with South Carolina. So much hope. They're 1-2 on the season in the SEC with their only win coming over Vanderbilt.
Yeah, man. They're going in the wrong direction. I was kind of looking forward to some South Carolina football at the start of the season with the new offense. I mean, they really sold me on that up-tempo spread offense, and I think the offense looks worse. I think this offense has taken several steps back, and they just can't get on the same page. And I don't know if it's because mainly they're implementing a new style offense. Maybe they don't have the pieces they need. But, I mean, anytime you got a weapon like Deebo Samuel and you're not giving him the ball – it's just, I don't know, you're asking for trouble. So I think he's got to take a long stare at that mirror when he gets home and try to figure out how to get these weapons the ball.
Now let me ask you this, Shane, just looking down the road a little bit ahead, South Carolina, would you favor them against any of these teams? They get at home, they get Texas A&M. Who would you favor there?
A&M.
At Florida.
Oh, Florida, for sure.
At Clemson.
Clemson, without a doubt.
If South Carolina were to lose all three of those games, Will Muschamp would be 1-14 against those three and Kentucky and Georgia at South Carolina. I mean, that's just abysmal for a guy that, like, it seems like his program's on the rise, but basically the teams you have to be competing with, it's not even close to 500.
No. Well, we talked about it. We thought this would be their year, mainly because of the scheduling. They had Georgia early, but they had them early, could get it over with. And then we thought that they would go on a tear until they got to Clemson. There was a potential that they could be competing for the East. And I tell you what, the product they're putting on the field is just it is not South Carolina football. And I don't be surprised if we start seeing a little bit of changing going on with that offense, because it's in bad shape right now, brother.
Now, on the flip side, obviously, the High Times with Mark Stoops, they're 5-0 overall, 3-0 in the SEC. He was fired up after this one, but, I thought the most interesting thing he had to say was basically, hell, like, at this point, we're used to it, and we're not dancing in the locker room. We understand what we're capable of. So that's the comment that really stuck out to me. So here's Mark Stoops on his Kentucky team.
I love this group, and it's routine now. They're in there, and we didn't even dance or celebrate at all. We just kind of, all right, that's a good job, and they expect to play that way, and really appreciate their effort, and the staff's done a great job as well.
All right, Shane, do you like hearing this? It sounds like Kentucky's, you know, they're over the celebrating the fact that they're pretty solid. It seems like they just know they're expected to beat these teams.
That's right. They're just walking to the locker room like nothing happened. They ain't even storming the field now, you know. I mean, you just beat South Carolina. They ain't even don't even flinch. And let me ask you, you know, you talked a little bit about South Carolina. Let me read you the next three games that they have, and let me tell you, do you think that they won't be favored in any of these? Texas A&M.
That'll be close. I think because it's at A&M, I have A&M as a slight favorite.
Okay, well, I don't. I'm all on Kentucky right now. I ain't till they prove me wrong. Vanderbilt Commodores.
Definitely Kentucky.
And Missouri.
I would give that to Kentucky as well.
So, I mean, like I said, they've got potential to win all three of these games mm-hmm. and face Georgia Bulldogs at home. They got that game at home November 3rd. And who would thought that in November that the Kentucky game would decide who wins the East? Isn't that crazy?
And to go a step further with that, Georgia will be coming off trips to LSU and against Florida in Jacksonville before that mm-hmm. Kentucky game. So Georgia is not going to be anywhere near a rusted team. They're going to be kind of a beaten up team heading into that one.
That's a good point, man. Good point.
So I wanted to throw this stat at you, Shane. This is pretty unbelievable. Because I knew Benny Snell was a great running back. I've been preaching that all offseason. I recently said, and this was before the Mississippi State game, I thought he was the best running back in the SEC. I thought he was the best running back in the SEC last year. I got a little bit mocked for that. But check out this stat of the most rushing touchdowns ever scored prior to a senior season in SEC history. Herschel Walker, he leads the way with 49. Tim Tebow, 43. Derrick Henry, 42. Mark Ingram, also with 42. And Derek McFadden at 41. Right next on the list is Benny Snell. How incredible is that?
Dude, what a list. I mean, name one player that didn't go to the next level. You know, Benny's going to be playing on Sundays next year. So good for him. I didn't realize how big he was until this game. I mean, he is a bruiser.
And keep it, and as long as they win one more game, they're going to go to a bowl game, right? So he's mm-hmm. got eight games to add to this list. And if he's getting these four touchdown games, which he's done multiple times in his career, I mean, he's just going to shatter this damn record. He's got eight games to get nine touchdowns. This is incredible.
Absolutely, man.
And Benny Snell was kind of just asked about being in that elite company after this game. I wanted to just get this clip in, and then we can discuss it.
You got your 40th touchdown run tonight. The list of guys more than you are guys like Leonard Fournette, Herschel Walker. What does it mean to be with those kind of guys?
It's an honor. It's definitely an honor. I'm happy where I am right now. You know, I really don't look at it like that. You know, I don't pay attention to it. I don't want to celebrate now either. I got more games. I got more to come. So I'm definitely honored. I'm blessed. You know, but we still got a lot more football to play.
All right, Shane, your boy Benny, he sounds pretty fired up to be up here with some of these legends.
Dude, Benny's always fired up. That's what I love about him. It don't matter what. He's always talking. If you remember him at the SEC conference down there in, where was it, Hoover? No, it wasn't in Hoover.
It was in Atlanta this year.
Atlanta, yeah. I mean, he came down there. It's the first time I ever really listened to him talk, and he was talking about Benny Snell in third person the whole time. I was like, who is this joker, you know? And then here we are, man. That was that's just kind of the persona he has, and he ain't backing down. And he's got that chip on his shoulder ever since Ohio State snubbed him. And he's out to prove people wrong, so and he's doing it. I mean, if this team wins out, how do you not let him – let's just say hypothetically, he wins out, goes to the SEC championship – let's say he just makes it to the SEC championship. I mean, at the rate he's going right now, there's no way you can't argue that he'd be at least at top one or two in the Heisman race.
Yeah, I think you'd have to give it to him because, you know, he's like elevated an entire program, put him on his back, you know, and just led him to this incredible run. And I think that's deserving of these accolades because even if you look at a guy like Tua, and I'm not trying to knock him by any means, but what is it really that he's asked to do? I mean, he's not even playing in the fourth quarters. He's surrounded by five-star receivers. He's surrounded by five-star backs and five-star linemen. Like, he's basically just in there and asked to manage the situation. Now he's putting up incredible numbers, but he's not blowing it. But I think it's been proven. They don't even need Tua to make it to the national championship game. You know, that's just they just score a little bit more now. So is he really the most outstanding, most valuable player? I don't think so. I think you take Benny Snell away from this team, I don't think they may be winless in the SEC right now.
That's the way a Heisman race should look. If you take that player off the team, what would the team be like? And like you said, you take Tua out, Hurts comes in, they're still winning games. You know, you take Benny off the team, I mean, these guys are probably there's no telling. They're going to be struggling. They ain't going to be undefeated, I'll tell you that right now.
All right, Shane. Let's jump to the SEC West, the Southwest Classic, Texas A&M and Arkansas. But before we start talking about this game, I wanted to mix it up just a little bit because I thought this was interesting. I'm going to play these are going to be quotes mixed from Jimbo Fisher and Chad Morris. I'm going to play them back to back. And then you tell me who you think won this game.
I think we played real well. Thought we played in spurts. Thought we come out and started well. Had some great things off the beginning. Lost control of the game, had control of the game, let guys hang in the game, up three scores, let them get back in the game. On offense, should have put things away on different drives, should have put those away, should have ran the football better, had too many inconsistencies, too many silly penalties, kept us behind the sticks late and third and long all day, had some critical drops early in the game when we could have really put pressure on them, and probably played our worst football game of the year by far, and need to get things fixed and play. We had some immediacy coming out, tried to play that, had decent intensity, but our intelligence level of how to play and how to expect to win and play from ahead and do things that champions do and good football teams do, we've got to grow in it, and I've got to continue to teach, educate, and make sure that doesn't happen, and we got to get better.
First of all, it was a heck of a football game. You know, against if you're just an average fan and you wanted to come see a really good football game, you saw a really good football game today. And, you know, I cannot be more proud of the players in that locker room, the coaches in that locker room, and their fight. These guys have continued to show up every day and continue to hit that tree in the same spot. And as I shared with them in that locker room, if you'll continue to do that, it's going to fall. It's going to fall. And the effort, the care, the love that they have in that locker room for each other was very apparent today.
All right, Shane. So after the press conferences from both Arkansas's coach, Chad Morris, and Texas A&M's Jimbo Fisher, if you just listen to these damn press conferences, who would you think have won this game?
Arkansas, without a doubt.
And I think that's the difference between these two, because Jimbo, he's pissed off. His team came up to a big lead, and I don't think they were really ever threatened. I mean, of course, Arkansas did have I should mention the final score, 24-17. Texas A&M wins it. They've won seven in a row in this series. But outside of basically Arkansas getting the ball, they did have an opportunity on the final drive to do something. But this team only put together two drives on the entire day. A&M kept shooting themselves in the foot after taking this big lead. And, you know, that I think this is why you see the difference between these two coaches, these two programs, because Jimbo Fisher's mad as hell, saying, you know, outside of my defense giving me something, and he was even critical of them for those two possessions they gave up. On the flip side, you got Chad Morris. You know, he's so happy. My team's looking better. They're competing. Damn, they were kind of a laughingstock after the opening kickoff. They allowed the running back Jayshon Corbin to run 100 yards for the kickoff.
Yeah.
What was your thoughts on this one?
Just that right there. I mean, first off, Arkansas needs to fire their special teams coach stat. I mean, it's every week they got a highlight reel. It was this week, it was Corbin. Last week, it was Auburn. Then the week before, North Texas doing the fake. I mean, it was like, come on, guys. It's time. And, of course, he kind of changed up the kick. I don't know if you saw that, but they started I don't know what you call that, kind of kicking it up real high and stuff. Mm-hmm. I put like a pooch kick type deal.
Right.
And, I'd rather give them the ball in the 30 than let anybody have a chance to run it back, because there's a high probability they would. So that being said, that put them behind the eight ball. And if you kind of watch this game, it felt like Arkansas – it took them a minute to realize that they could compete with this team. But when they did, brother, I'm telling you what, this team actually looked pretty good, and especially on defense.
Yeah, and, you know, this was a game where Kellen Mond, I think, looked his shakiest. Now, of course, He was 17 of 26, so it's not like he was god-awful, but he threw some bad picks. Jimbo Fisher's no hesitation. You know, he's not thinking about pulling him by any means. He wasn't that bad, but just was not on point after that strong start. Trayvon Williams, he came out. He was the lead guy in this one. He had 29 carries, 152 yards, two touchdowns. He was the difference in this one. But I just kind of the state of the programs here, where Texas A&M, I think, obviously expects significantly better performances than their team, than what they got on Saturday. But at the same time, I know Arkansas is, you know, probably one of the lesser teams in the SEC from what we've seen this year. But I think it says something that, you know, if you show up with your C-minus game and you still win a conference game, I think that's a bit of a progress there for Jimbo Fisher and his Aggies.
Yeah, without a doubt, brother.
All right, Shane, sticking in the SEC West, the late night game, the latest damn SEC game I've ever remembering. LSU at home kicked off at, like, I want to say 9:30 at night, something insane like that. But they beat Ole Miss 45-16. This one was never competitive. I was pretty surprised about just how crushing of a defeat this was for the Ole Miss Rebels. And my main takeaway from this one was our boy Smokin' Joe Burrow. He put up 292 passing yards, three touchdowns, 96 yards rushing, and another score. That was the fourth most total yardage LSU player has ever registered. What was your thoughts on this one?
Dude, I really tried to stay up and watch this thing. I really did. But I was surprised just how good the LSU offense looked. Now, granted, it's against Ole Miss, and all year Ole Miss has really struggled at defense. But there was some passes that Burroughs was making that was just – I mean, they were on the money. So, I think this LSU team is – it deserves the top five spot without a doubt.
Yeah, and Burrow hit nine different receivers, so he's spreading it all out. They got three guys here with over 67 yards rushing. So, I mean, they're all over the place. And, you know, Coach O, he didn't have much interesting to say after this one. But Joe Burrow, I wanted to play these thoughts on him and just why the LSU offense is clicking. So let's cut to this, and then we can discuss it.
Game five, starting to get chemistry, starting to understand what Coach E wants when every play is called, understand why we're calling it, and you know, just a great chemistry, O-line, receivers, running backs, me, coaches, and I think we're starting to click a little bit.
Do you like running, read options?
Absolutely, yeah. Would like to get 100, two more yards tonight, but I think we ran it successfully tonight.
How much confidence do you have in the offense in yourself now compared to the beginning of the season?
I've always been
comfortable.
Yeah, I've always been confident in myself, but I think, like you said, comfortability is key, and I'm starting to get really comfortable with these guys and these coaches, and I think we're starting to hit our stride a little bit.
All right, Shane, so this is obviously the time they need to get this thing rolling, because now they're getting into the meat of the SEC schedule. They're going on the road to Florida. You know, if they keep up, obviously we know how great the LSU defense has been. If this offense can keep at this pace, is there any chance that LSU is the best team in the SEC?
That's a tough question, man. I mean, because Bama's out there, and Bama has done nothing wrong. I mean, they have not gave me a reason to say that they're not the number one team in the country right now. I mean, they're scoring at will, other than their freaking place kicker. They've got it all figured out down there. But I will tell you, the thing I love most about LSU is just the total balance of this team. They can run, they can throw, their defense can stop the run, their defense can stop the pass. It's just a perfect mold. There's no weak spots. And so that makes any game competitive. So when these two play, Alabama and LSU, I mean, I'd probably going to lean more toward Alabama, but then again, it's kind of a coin toss just because how balanced. I mean, freaking Joe Burrow had almost 100 yards rushing. The team can do it all.
Yeah, I was just really impressed and really depressed looking at Ole Miss. I mean, I don't know what the hell they're doing. The receivers were not really even doing much. Tamu's looking shaky. The only player that showed up in this one was Scotty Phillips, and he had a solid game, 96 yards and a touchdown. But, you know, overall, just Ole Miss, it's kind of like what we saw last year. Once they started losing, they kind of realized they had nothing to play for anyway, and it seems like that's starting to settle in already.
Yeah, and it felt like, what's his name, the LSU defense cornerback, Greedy.
Greedy Williams.
It felt like he was, every time I watched, he was all over Metcalf. So I don't know if that was just schematically how they had it set up, but he took him out. He only had 37 yards receiving, three catches, but he had a ton of targets. And, you know, A.J. Brown, the same thing. It's just they really just – they shut these guys down, man. And that's a tough team to do it. LSU got tested because they were launching those balls.
Okay, Shane, so we touched a little bit on Alabama there. It was kind of a laugher that they were in, but they faced Lafayette here. 50-point spread. I'm kind of pissed off at Alabama because they were up 49-0 at halftime, and they still didn't fucking cover. Any takeaways from this one, Shane, except for the fact that Alabama just opened a can of whoop-ass here?
They were scoring at will, and what you made reference to, I was thinking, here's the spread. It's what, 51 point? It's 50 points on Bravada when I looked at it. What was it up to?
Well, it ended right at, I believe, 49.5. So right there, 49 okay. and a half, 50.
So here it is at halftime, 49-0. And you're a gambler, and you're like, yes, Alabama, I've always bet over it, and they've always came through for me. This is, I mean, just run the clock out. We'll be fine. Kick a field goal. And it did not happen. I mean, you have to feel bad because there had been a lot of money placed on this game. But yeah,
They trotted out the third-string quarterback at the beginning of the third quarter, and I was like, all right, I think this guy's pretty solid. He'll get it done. Mac Jones is who I'm talking about. His first pass went 94 yards for a touchdown, 56-0. I was like, hell, they're going to score 100. No, they didn't score another damn point the entire game. They missed two field goals that were like within extra point range. Either one would have covered here, but they couldn't fucking get it done. And Lafayette here, they rushed for 200 yards on the ground, which is kind of significant because I threw this stat out earlier today, but Nick Saban's teams at Alabama there since 2008 have only allowed 24 out of 149 teams to rush for 150 or more. So sure a lot of this was in junk yardage, but it's still an accomplishment to run for that many on an Alabama defense.
Oh, yeah. But like you said, these guys didn't have to do anything. Tua was 8 for 8 and two touchdowns. And Hurts was just right behind him, 4 for 6 for one touchdown. So these guys didn't have to do it. They came out, they did it, and they tried to work on that running game. I mean, that's all they had to do.
All right, Shane, final game here. I wanted to really dive into Auburn. Beat Southern Miss at home. That was not impressive. This was one of my favorite bets of the week because it was a 27-point spread, but Auburn only won 24-13. And for the first time in the Gus Malzahn era, Auburn has failed to rush for 100 yards in back-to-back games, and that's against Arkansas and against Southern Miss, two of the weaker teams they're going to face all season. Is it time to panic at Auburn?
Oh, God, it's been time. I mean, it has been time because – honestly, I didn't even know this game was still on. You know, they had that rain delay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw something, and I was like, oh, shit, that game's still on. So I switched over, and right when I did, Auburn had the ball. Stenham got sacked and fumbled, and there's Southern Miss with the ball, and they're down 8. So it was like all of a sudden this is a ball game in the fourth quarter against Southern Mississippi. And the fact that that Stenham's getting sacked, you know, I mean, he was running for his life against this team, and that offensive line is just straight garbage. I don't know what they need to put another lineman in for the tight end. Put a, you know, just I don't know. They got to do something. Give Stenham some time to throw the ball.
Yeah, and here's a pet peeve of mine that I don't understand. Auburn is still ranked in the top 10 right now. Now, I know these polls are basically meaningless, but, you know, people bitch about – I've heard a lot of people say, well, is LSU legit? Do they have – they earned this ranking? I mean, the only teams they haven't beaten in front of them are basically Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia. And they play Georgia and Alabama coming up. So And I think they can compete with both of those teams, but I'm just trying to, you know, scratch my head on what the hell has Auburn done outside of start the season ranked high. I mean, I think people just leave them up there because that's where they were ranked at the beginning and they deserve it. But this is barely a top 25 team in my opinion right now, not to say a top 10 team. So I just don't understand that. I think that's kind of just voters not paying enough attention outside of maybe box stores. I don't know, but this is a team that is not playing too well right now, and they're going to drop several SEC games if they keep playing at this level.
I will tell you, though, they do have a top five defense, in my opinion, and that's what's kept them in a lot of these games. But they can only do so much. If you're going three and out and three and out against some of these heavy hitters that they got coming up on the schedule, that defense is going to wear out. And when it does, the games are going to get ugly quick. So kudos to the defense because, like I said, they did really keep them in this game.
Yeah, and the only other SEC game on the slate last week, Vanderbilt beat Tennessee State 31-27. I mean, it just looks like Vanderbilt's slide is already starting. They almost lost to an FCS. They should have lost to an FCS team on Saturday.
Yeah, I had no clue. I didn't even look at it until it was too late, and I was like, what the hell happened over there? Oh, Mason.
All right, Shane, so now we're going to do our weekly –
All that matters is we came out there and won the game, you know.
All right, Shay, jumping into our weekly game here, guessing the weekly lines. This is obviously week six. These lines debuted Sunday evening. So this is our game. If you've not been keeping up, Shane and I both guess the opening lines before they come out. And then, obviously, they come out on Sunday. We record a little bit after, and we just kind of see who came closest to guessing the actual opening line. So, you ready to do it, Shane?
Let's do it.
All right, Shane. So, let's start with what game is the least interesting here. Let's go Louisiana Monroe at Ole Miss. What did you think the line would be in that one?
In that game, I thought Ole Miss would be a 17-point favorite.
Well, Shane, and keep in mind, people, we do not look at each other's lines before we do this, but I also said 17, so and we were both pretty close. That line opened at Ole Miss minus 21, so a 3-touchdown spread. That seems about right for this one, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I could see Ole Miss scoring 67 points, but Monroe's going to get 50. So 17's a good spread.
All right, Shane, jumping to the SEC East, Vanderbilt at Georgia. What did you think the opening line would be for this one?
This one I have Georgia as a 28.5-point favorite.
Ooh. Well, I said 28, so I was a shade under, and I win this one because the line has come out, and it's Georgia minus 27. So what made you think it would be over a 4-touchdown spread?
Well, just the fact that I saw Georgia, I saw what they can do, and we were just joking about Vandy slipping, but it's true. Mm-hmm. It's happened in the past, and this is not a team that you want to play slipping, and it's going to be at home against Georgia. I just think that – I don't know. I think Georgia learned a lot this week at Tennessee. I think they're starting to figure up that offensive line, and if they get the quarterback situation down, yeah, this game's not even going to be close, brother.
Yeah, now keep in mind, though, the last time Vanderbilt came to Athens, they won this game, believe it or not. So
I do, because that was also the year we had the Hail Mary. So
yep.
they had a rough go, but this is a new ball team, brother.
Yeah, without a doubt. Okay, one of the biggest lines you're ever going to see in an SEC game, Alabama at Arkansas. What did you think Alabama was going to be favored in this one?
This one was kind of hard because, like I said, I've been kind of impressed with what Arkansas is doing, but I've been even more impressed with what Alabama's been doing. So I got Alabama as a 34-point favorite.
Well, Shane, you were close, but you were off because I said 35, and that's exactly what it opened as, Alabama minus 35. And how about that? That's incredible, that many touchdowns to give on the road in the SEC.
God, I thought I was a little high on that one too. We're getting good at this, brother.
All right, next game on the docket, let's see. A little barn burner here. This first one to 10 points may win this one, but Auburn traveling to Mississippi State. What did you think the line was going to be for this one?
This one, I went back and forth. I really didn't know. I mean, because like you said, this could be just as ugly as the Mississippi State-Florida game. So I gave Auburn the edge at 11 points. What about you?
Ooh. Oh, no, I thought that was way too high. I went Auburn minus 5, and it turned out Auburn is the favorite by only 3.5. So you were, thinking it was going to be that much more. Are you that low on Mississippi State at this point just based on their Florida and Kentucky appearances?
I really am. I really am. I think Auburn is going to have a field day with this Mississippi State offense. And I think the points that they do score might possibly be defensive. So I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm reading a little bit into their ranking too. But like I said, I was at the time so mad at Mississippi State, I had to give Auburn the edge there.
Well, yeah, if someone gets a safety in this game, they might as well just take a knee the rest of the game and just start punting. That's right. They may win it.
That's right, brother.
Okay, Shane, so how about this one? Missouri at South Carolina. Who did you have favored in this one?
This was another tough one for me because I really like what Missouri's done, but South Carolina, I still think they're going to get it right. And the fact that it's at home, maybe there's a slight home field advantage here. So I've got South Carolina at 3.5. What do you think?
Well, you know, I had actually Missouri favored in this game. I thought Missouri would be a 4-point favorite coming in. You know, they're obviously coming off the bye. They'll get a South Carolina team that's not playing well. Jake Bentley, a little banged up. Looks like he's going to be just fine. But looks like you were far more accurate on this one because South Carolina is the opening favorite. It's at South Carolina minus 2, so you were almost dead on that one.
Oh, cool, man. Yeah, I really think because there was a moment in that Kentucky game I thought South Carolina was going to get back into this. Mm-hmm. But they kind of shot themselves in the foot. They went 80 yards. It took 10 minutes, like 30 real minutes, to get down there just to turn it over. So I think if South Carolina could have just put their foot on the gas, it could have been closer and give Kentucky a lot. I just think South Carolina is a little bit better than what the box score showed last Saturday.
Okay, Shane, so this is going to be a really intriguing game come Saturday. Kentucky at Texas A&M. Who did you have favored in this one?
This one here, I am a believer of the Kentucky Wildcats now, so I've got them as a favorite, 9 points.
Ooh. Well, you know, if you're that confident, I would suggest you bet in Kentucky immediately while the spread is where it's at. But I had Texas A&M favored as a 3-point favorite. I thought that would be about right, about a field goal home advantage there. And A&M has opened as a 6.5-point favorite. So basically, complete opposite of what you have there. What gives you that much confidence that Kentucky is going to get it done at Texas A&M?
Because I've bet against Kentucky this whole time. And every time Benny Snell comes out, and he proves me wrong. So I'm just, like I said, they've been doing it. They've been doing it against great teams, and I just think that until Kentucky proves me wrong, I'm on the train. So give me Kentucky with 9 points. I may take that bet, Mike. I just may take it.
Yeah, because I actually think that will get driven down by the end of the week. I think that's way too many. Like I said, 2 to 3, I think, is a much more what it should be for in favor of Texas A&M, and that's purely because they are at home. You know, I rewatched that South Carolina-Kentucky game last night. I did not realize, watching it live, just how into the game that Kentucky crowd is. I mean, they really are into this football team right now, and I am curious to see how much of that energy will carry on to the road. I don't know if it will because Texas A&M has such a home field advantage like we saw at that Clemson game. So that could be a big indicator in this one, but that will be a great game, I can tell.
Absolutely.
Now the last game on the docket here, Shane, LSU at Florida is the SEC CBS game of the week. Who do you got favored who did you think would be favored at opening?
This one here, again, I didn't know. I mean, this is – there's so much uncertainty this week. And I just – like I said, I was impressed with Florida's defense. I was equally impressed with LSU's defense. But I think that Florida's offense is a step down from LSU right now. So that's why I've got LSU at an 8.5-point favorite against Florida.
Hmm. Well, I was right on with you. I thought it would be LSU minus 6, but we were both a little bit off here because it's LSU minus 2.5. What do you make of that line being that low?
Just the fact that the defense is good, the fact that it's in the swamp, maybe that's some of the contributing factors there. Because I'd say what you want. The fan base is a little peppy this week, man. I swear, I've been – every other tweet's been a Gator telling me to sing that damn song. So so they're starting to get fired up. I mean, they were pumped up at the beginning of the season because some people were saying that there's a chance they make the playoffs. They dropped to Kentucky. Fan base went quiet. Then they went to Tennessee, kicked Tennessee's ass. Then they went over to Mississippi State, kicked their ass. And so now they're down here in Florida, home field advantage against LSU. You talk about a game getting them back on the map. If they can beat the LSU Tigers, man, Florida's right back in the mix, brother.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I'm starting to think that may happen. This may be a little bit of a team of destiny. You know, they keep winning these games that I don't see coming. But this is going to be an interesting game because it seems like LSU Florida never seems to go the way that you think it will heading into it. These two teams really hate each other. They obviously play every year. They've been, you know, very hotly contested, you know, ones where guys are getting in fights during the pre-games. But this is obviously a little bit different because it's Dan Mullen against Ed Orgeron. Last year, that matchup was a damn nightmare for LSU. Mississippi State won 37-7. So this is going to be an interesting one here, just how that translates now that Dan Mullen's at Florida. He's taken that mentality over to the Gainesville, obviously, but he doesn't have the same roster. So this should be probably a really tight game in my mind, and it's hard to make a decision right now on which way to lean for me.
Absolutely.
All right, Shane, that's all I got on this one. Unless you got anything, I think we're going to get off here.
Just two things real quick. One is it's been now 680 days. Well, if you listen to this tomorrow, it's 681 days since Tennessee last won an SEC matchup. So I thought I'd throw that out there. And one other thing, I appreciate everybody taking the time to rate and review us on iTunes. We did have three new ratings, so I wanted to read those real quick.
Okay.
The first one here is great podcast. This is from No Happy Hey Buddies. It says, great podcast. Hey, buddy. Love the info and laughs. Only negative is the color orange is ugly. Go Dogs. another one here. This one's for Matt, RP_RTR. SEC lovers must follow. These guys know their SEC football. They bring knowledge and humor multiple times per week. This show makes my commute much better. They do some unique things, and I really appreciate their objectiveness. Keep it up. So I appreciate that, Matt, and, of course, No Happy Buddies. And one last one, and this is a long one, so hang in there with me. It's WDFGHHHIR. Okay, it's just a lot of letters there. it says, fun podcast. Guys are funny and keep it lighthearted, but in-depth. They make me laugh out loud a few times, especially the Tell the Truth Tuesday skit. That's from Ollie, our buddy Ollie on Twitter. So I appreciate everybody again taking the time to rate and review. And I do appreciate the listeners. You know, there's a lot of different fan bases out there. And again, I'd like to sincerely apologize to the Gator Nation and the Wildcats out there. All right, Mike, that's all I got, brother.
All right, Shane, thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We really appreciate it. And thank you, Shane, as always, for joining me. I'll catch you on the next one.
All right, see you, buddy. Go Vols. I got a 9-year-old running around here. Are you good? Are you good now?
I'm getting a drink.
Okay. Good God. I had all day to get that drink, and now you want the drink?